Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
The lowest amount of acres burned since we started keeping statistics in 1940.
Alaska's wildfire season remains at a historically low level. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 14th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, tourism companies in Valdez are stunned by last-minute cruise ship cancellations.
To not even be held accountable to finish out the season was really kind of hard, because then you could adjust from there. But I mean, a lot of small businesses were left holding the bag.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
And by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
The U.S. House today passed an annual bill to reauthorize the military and give troops a 5.2% pay raise. Alaska's congresswoman voted against it, as did nearly all other Democrats. In an emailed statement, Representative Mary Peltola said it was one of the hardest votes she's taken, but she said she couldn't support the amendments Republicans added for what she describes as purely political reasons. The amendments passed largely along party lines. They include limits on abortion and transgender care for military members, and they prohibit any military office for diversity or inclusion. Peltola's statement says she believes service members are citizens with rights to privacy and medical choice. She said, quote, "We shouldn't be pitting pay raises that they deserve against the reproductive freedoms that they also deserve," end quote. While she voted no on passage of the bill today, Peltola missed 30 votes on Thursday, most of them on amendments to the defense bill.
Unfortunately, she is very unwell and is in bed at home.
Peltola's chief of staff, Anton McParland, spoke Thursday as the voting was still underway.
I would just say that she is sick and unfortunately unable to be on the Hill today, but will hopefully be back in action tomorrow.
Peltola had played in the Congressional Women's Softball Game, an annual fundraiser for breast cancer care, on Wednesday, then fell ill. The next day turned out to be a big one for House votes, and her absence doubled the number of votes she had previously missed. She's now missed more votes than all but 11 House members. Peltola Press Secretary Sam Erickson said the congresswoman would have voted against an amendment to stop reimbursing military members for travel to get an abortion. He declined to say how she would have voted on any of the other votes she missed Thursday. The Senate must still pass the defense bill. The Democratic leadership there is unlikely to approve a measure with the abortion and transgender care limits the House added. The pilot in a fatal crash near Old Harbor on Kodiak Island earlier this month told investigators he got caught in a downdraft before hitting 3 mountainous spurs. As KMXT's Brian Venwa reports, that's among new information in a preliminary report from the National Transportation Safety Board released this week.
A Piper Cherokee went down just a few minutes after takeoff from the Old Harbor airstrip on July 2nd. 2 passengers died, the pilot and 2 other passengers were injured. The plane was a chartered flight from Vertigo Air Taxi, which is based in Kodiak. Clint Johnson is the NTSB's Alaska Region Chief. Johnson says the agency hopes to get more information from the pilot once he recovers.
After he has a chance to recuperate and is ready to talk with us, we're going to sit down with him and see if we can get a little bit better of an idea of the details and the circumstances that led up to this accident.
The pilot has not yet been publicly identified. According to the report, he told investigators that he was attempting to gain altitude to clear a mountain pass when he got caught in a downdraft. In addition to weather, the NTSB also looks at mechanical issues.
We're going to be tearing down the engine, looking at the airframe to make sure there were no control issues as far as controllability. There's a whole litany of things that we go through.
Johnson says the NTSB will take about a year before they draw any conclusions about what went wrong. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
Alaska's wildfire season remains on track to be the slowest on record. BLM Alaska Fire Service spokesperson Beth Ipson cautions that the season is not over, but based on this summer's weather trend, Alaska is likely to set a record for fewest acres burned.
We've had 150 fires burn around 1,500 acres, which, if we continue at this rate, will be the lowest amount of acres burned since we started keeping statistics in 1940.
In earlier decades, acreage assessment was not as accurate as it is today. But Ipson says, according to records, Alaska's lowest season total is a little over 3,000 acres burned in 1964. She says this year's low number is the result of generally cooler, wetter weather and minimal lightning.
Lightning strikes that could cause the fires that we would see in a typical fire season. And then, of course, we haven't had that prolonged heat spell or, you know, dry weather that would make the vegetation, the fuels available for burning too. So the combination of that's really kept things very subdued.
Ipson adds that the small number of fires has also enabled larger responses to each start.
We've been able to send a lot of resources on to these fires right away, get on them and get them contained.
While Alaska's fire season has been record slow, Canada is experiencing just the opposite, with nearly 23 million acres burned so far across the country. Ipson says Alaska's state and federal response agencies have sent personnel to help out in Canada, including four fire crews.
Pioneer Peak with the state, both of AFS's hotshot crews, and even the Forest Service put together a crew from Tongass National Forest and Chugach National Forest.
Ipson says the Alaskans deployed to Canada have worked alongside firefighters from around the world, including South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and South Korea. Ipson notes that this year's fire season in the lower 48 has been slow to start, but if and when it does, some Alaska-based firefighters will also likely be available to deploy there. The Anchorage Assembly this week narrowly passed a measure to set up a pilot campground for up to 60 homeless residents. Whether the city has the time, staff, and money to do it this summer as envisioned is not clear yet. Supporters hope a temporary supported site with some minimum safety and sanitation considerations will improve some campers' situations, as well as problems with neighborhood crime and nuisances around existing unofficial campgrounds. If successful, they say the model could be expanded in the future. Felix Rivera leads the assembly committee that works on homelessness issues.
I'm not sure that this is what we should be doing 100%. But damn it, we need to try something.
Shelters in Anchorage are full. Hundreds of people are living outdoors. Opponents say the time and money going into the pilot will come at the expense of winter shelter planning and long-term housing, though. Assemblymember Meg Zalatel, who is also the head of the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness, was the most vocal opponent at the assembly's meeting Tuesday.
I feel like we are on a hamster wheel of waste. We are wasting time. We are wasting resources.
Standing up, the campground falls largely on the mayor's homelessness coordinator, Alexis Johnson. She says she's not sure it can be done by the end of this summer, but it's possible.
I think there is one key component that's missing, and that's funding. How do we set up a camp with no money?
Johnson said working on the campground will impact her division's planning for winter shelter. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, dipnet season is off to a slow start in Kenai.
Last year, I only caught one, and I was like, I think like at the end of fishing.
At Seward.
But then I caught this one today, so I might catch another one today, too.
Still catching them. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. We're glad to have you tuning in, and we'd love to welcome you as a member. Make a donation to this station and be a part of the public media family. Thank you.
An Indiana man who allegedly tricked some Alaska teenagers into recording video of sex acts and murdering another teenager in 2019 has pleaded guilty to child pornography charges. Darren Schillmiller had posed online as a rich man named Tyler and said he'd pay millions of dollars for sexually explicit photos and video of a minor, according to court documents. Schillmiller signed a plea agreement entered in federal court Thursday admitting to a single count of conspiring to produce child pornography. In a separate case in state court, Schillmiller is also accused of convincing his alleged co-conspirator Denali Bremmer, now 22, to record the killing of an Anchorage resident, 19-year-old Cynthia Hoffman, for $9 million. Police investigating Hoffman's death found the images of child porn on Bremer's phone, which led to the federal charges. Bremer pleaded guilty in February to Hoffman's murder. Schillmiller is set for a change of plea hearing in August in the murder case. Norwegian Cruise Lines abruptly canceled the rest of their season stops in Valdez late last month, leaving local businesses scrambling. The city says the cancellations account for about one-third of the expected cruise guests this summer. And for at least one tourism company, the Norwegian passengers made up nearly all of their business. Brian Rhodes is the owner of Keystone Tourism, a sightseeing company he started this summer based on the planned number of cruise visitors. He says over the past 2 years, city officials have been promoting the increasing cruise traffic to Valdez business owners, and he never realized those scheduled stops were not guaranteed.
It came to a shock, not only me, but the other business owners in town, that there was no legal binding agreement between these enormous companies and the entire city. You know what I mean? That is ramped up to get these people to come here. To not even be held accountable to finish out the season was really kind of hard, because then you could adjust from there. But I mean, a lot of small businesses were left holding the bag, you know, and that's what the real bottom line is.
Rhodes says he plans to sell his guide business. Jeremy Talbot is the ports and harbor director for Valdez. He told Alaska Public Media's Michael Finelli that Norwegian pulling out is a big hit to the local economy, but says the city has consistently cautioned business owners to focus on in-state visitors. Alaskan tourists still make up the majority of Valdez tourists, Talbot says, and are much more reliable than cruise lines.
I think we've made it very clear when the vessels first started coming back, we do a lot of trainings and stuff to help businesses. We offer at every one of these business meetings I attend, and we've discussed this quite a bit. And I've been pretty vocal about, you know, reminding everybody that, hey, this happened before. And I specifically myself have said, this is the dessert. This is not the main course. We are a community that is RV Alaskan situated. And so if your business can survive really well with the local tourism that we have, you know, year in and year out, Alaskans and RVs, and it can adapt to cruise ships and provide some of those excursions, but don't depend on the cruise ships. We've been very vocal at every meeting since early 2017, when before the first boat arrived, and since then at every other public meeting.
You said you've experienced this before. Is it, this is a somewhat common thing for cruise lines to cancel a whole season of stops?
Yes, mid-season. This has happened before. It has not impacted our community like this one has. This one specific one that canceled last season, they canceled 25-plus runs. They were coming on Wednesdays and Saturdays doing a passenger transfer in and out of between Whittier and Valdez. This one, we felt more impact because this one was spending 12 hours here, and they were booking excursions and recreating in the city. And so our local businesses are really feeling the impact from this one. The last one, they didn't feel the impact because they weren't spending a lot of time. We're not booking excursions.
So what did they tell you? Did they give you any explanation for why they were canceling?
So before they did it, no. I have had a meeting with one of their team members, and it wasn't one single thing. It was multiple things, but they're in the business of making a profit. And so I'm assuming that had, you know, the boat when it was coming in was only coming in half full. That run was not selling very well. And I think somebody made a decision that it wasn't enough to be profitable for them. I asked them, you know, during that conversation, if there was a problem with the dock there, and they'd confirmed no problem with the dock. Other cruise lines are operating, you know, similar routes and successfully, and they're adding more vessels. Viking's adding a second ship in 2025. Holland continues to come in and come out. Carnival's coming in next year. And so we have returning vessels. It's disappointing, but I don't think that the city is the reason why they're not coming here.
That was Valdez Ports and Harbor Director Jeremy Talbot talking with Alaska Public Media's Michael Finelli about the Norwegian Cruise Line's canceled stops in the city this summer. In a written statement, Norwegian Cruise Lines said they try to maintain original itineraries, but, quote, at times modifications are made to optimize the itinerary or to accommodate certain circumstances, end quote. The most popular dipnet fishery in the state opened this week at the mouth of the Kenai River. Although the fishing has been off to a slow start, KDLL's Riley Board went down to the beach to talk to dipnetters who have found success in the early days of the opening.
It's a sunny day, the first in a week in Kenai. On the beach, there are dogs, their owners, some picnickers, and a smattering of wader-clad anglers in the water, arms outstretched to support their large nets. The personal-use dipnet fishery at the mouth of the Kenai River opened Monday morning to a modest showing and gloomy weather. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game said in a report this week that sockeye fishing at the dipnet site is slow, but will pick up as late-run fish enter the river. On Thursday, at the North Kenai Beach, there's a growing group of dipnetters. At the water's edge, two are untangling a salmon from their net.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Great, really great.
Can you tell me your names?
Miguel Rojo-Lemke, and you are?
I am Jonathan Rojo.
Where are you from?
Well, we live here in Kenai, kind of across the street here.
And how long have you been out fishing today?
It's been like an hour. This is our second fish. So two sockeye so far.
Rojo Lemke says it's his first time dipnetting because he's only been an Alaska resident for 2 years. Dipnet permits are only available to Alaska residents, meaning people who have resided in the state for the 12 months prior to applying for the permit. They're issued on a household basis rather than to individuals. Rojo Lemke says that he's had his best fishing success here at the dipnet fishery.
Oh man, it's exciting. We've been fishing a few times. I didn't have much luck at the Russian River or the Kenai River. For kids, it's really hard to get them attached until you give them a good experience, like catching a fish. So he saw me catch one and he said, oh, I want to try it, Dad. So we went out and got another.
How did it feel for you?
It feels really fun because last year I only caught one and I think at the end of fishing
at Seward.
But then I caught this one today, so I might catch another one today, too.
At the South Beach, on the opposite side of the river's mouth, there are about 15 dipnets in the water. Brian Zakharoff is standing waist high in the river with his net.
It's been pretty good for the past few days. You know, the dipnetters went out last night. It was pretty slow all morning.
Are you coming out every day?
Yeah.
How many fish have you caught?
I've gotten 23 so far.
What have you seen in terms of other folks being out here? Has it been busy?
It's kind of hit and miss. Yeah, it's right now the tide is pretty much slack, so it's kind of off and on right now.
How many years have you been dipnetting?
As we're talking, Zakharoff snags a sockeye, his 24th of the week.
Here for about 12 years.
A growing dipnet fishery has been open since late June on the Kasilof, where many anglers have had success at the less hectic site. Dipnetting on the Kenai is open through July 31st and is open every day from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. We're glad to have you tuning in, and we'd love to welcome you as a member. Make a donation to this station and be a part of the public media family. Thank you.
The deadline to submit bids to the city of Fairbanks for demolition of the Polaris Hotel Tower is this coming Monday. Mayor David Prues says bids will be selected based on review and go before the city council the following Monday, July 24th.
And if they endorse the resolution, then on the morning of Tuesday, July 25th, I will be signing the notice to proceed, the contract, and we're off and running.
Mayor Prues said no bids had been received as of Wednesday, but that they'll likely come in shortly before the deadline. Meanwhile, the first part of the Polaris demolition, removal of its one-story annex, is nearly complete.
The annex is gone, and they're backfilling the hole. I'd say within another week, they'll be done with the backfill of where the annex used to be.
Cruz says the annex demo is being completed within a $1.1 million contract awarded to Coldfoot Environmental Services for the project. He says it's over a month behind schedule, but the job has been done right.
He did it thoroughly. He did it correctly. We had no airborne particle days of complaints, which was very important for me.
The city has $10 million from the Environmental Protection Agency and $3 million from the state of Alaska for the Polaris demolition projects. Mayor Pruz says he expects that whatever company is awarded the contract to take down the main tower will begin work on its interior before the end of the summer.
Do the as much internally as they can while the weather's good, then come back in the spring, May, and start knocking down the building.
Cruz says he plans to go up on the Polaris Tower roof and cut down one of the many trees that have grown up during the years of neglect. He says it's a gesture symbolic of his efforts over the last 8 years to bring down the long derelict 11-story high-rise. The city of Nenana will host a celebration Saturday to commemorate the 100th anniversary of two important milestones in the history of transportation in Alaska. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Two major milestones in the development of Alaska occurred a century ago this month in Nenana. That's a big deal for the small city at the confluence of the Tanana and Nenana rivers, and Mayor Josh Verhagen says he's looking forward to celebrating the centennials.
There have been quite a lot of big things that have happened in this little town.
The first milestone occurred on July 4th, 1923, when fledgling pilot Carl Ben Eielson and a passenger flew from Fairbanks to Nenana and back. Verhagen says a lot of Alaskans don't know about the flight or fully appreciate its significance, and neither did he until he started studying it a few months ago.
And I am really into the history, but it wasn't until this year that I learned that the very first flight made from one community to another in the interior of Alaska was 100 years ago.
So it was really Eielson's first flight personally in Alaska, and it was also the start of commercial aviation, you might say, here in Fairbanks.
Bill Green is a member of the Pioneer Air Museum in Fairbanks, and he's an aviation history buff. He says that first flight launched Eielson's career as a bush pilot and explorer.
Right away, he started giving rides here in Fairbanks, and they did some charter flights in July, August of 1923.
Eielson also explored many remote regions of Alaska by air, and in 1928, he was the first to fly over the North Pole en route to Europe. Later that year, he also flew to Antarctica. But the following year, he and his mechanic died in a plane crash in Siberia, where they'd flown to help evacuate crew members of a ship stranded in ice, along with its cargo of furs.
He was a history maker, and unfortunately met an early end there in eastern Siberia.
Verhagen says he hopes to get a flyover for Saturday's celebration by aircraft out of Eielson Air Force Base, which was named after the pilot. He says the Eielson-themed events will begin at 10 a.m. in the city square downtown and out at the airport, followed by activities at the Alaska Railroad Depot to commemorate completion of a rail line from Seward to Fairbanks.
This is, to me, the most exciting thing almost of the whole day.
The railroad-themed events begin with a presentation by members of the California-based Polish Council of Engineers in North America, who will present a plaque honoring Ralph Majewski, a Polish-American engineer who designed the railroad bridge across the Tanana River at Nenana.
They wanted to honor him and put up a plaque in his name to give him credit for his engineering feat.
The delegation also will give the city a 4.5-foot replica of the 700-foot bridge. Verhagen says it's the second-longest single-span truss bridge in the world. He says the builder of the bridge chose that design because he didn't want to risk setting up a pile-driver operation in that deep and swift stretch of the Tanana.
They didn't believe that putting a pile into the middle of the Tanana River was a good idea with what they'd seen from the power of the river breaking things up.
The unveiling of the bridge model and plaque will be followed by commemorations of the history of the railroad that runs through the town. Alaska Railroad President and CEO Bill O'Leary says invited dignitaries will reenact President Warren G. Harding's driving of a golden spike in Nenana in a July 15th, 1923 ceremony that signified completion of the rail line.
The governor is going to be involved in that. I think Senator Sullivan and maybe actually the head of the Federal Railroad Administration.
O'Leary says he may even take a turn at pounding the spike. He says the railroad appreciates all the recognition, and he wants Alaskans to know the feeling is mutual.
Everybody that works here knows how important this railroad is to the state and takes that very seriously, and really honored to be in that position.
Verhagen says all Alaskans are invited to the centennial celebrations, and for those who can't make it, he says the events will be webcast live on the mayor's Facebook page. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A mysterious flaming object crossed the sky of the Northern Lynn Canal on Saturday evening. The event was caught on camera and posted on social media, and as KHNS's Alan DePremenil reports, it could have been an old satellite re-entering the atmosphere.
Maggie Martin was walking with her sister by the beach in Haines. Their walk ended with a surprise.
Never seen anything like that.
As they looked up, the sisters saw something in the sky.
It looked like a cloud trail, but like there was no clouds in the sky, and so it just looked like a little ball of fire just slowly going across Rapinski and disappeared, and the smoke lingered for a little while, and it was pretty black smoke.
Martin posted a short video of the mysterious event to a popular community Facebook page. The video shows a burning object cutting through the sky. The caption reads, "What is this?" and indicates the time of the observation as 10:22 p.m. The Aerospace Corporation provided a likely answer on its website. The organization tracks space debris that could damage spacecraft. It lists a satellite called Cosmos 1356 that re-entered the atmosphere on the day the flaming object was caught on camera. A map on the website shows the trajectory of the satellite passing over the Northern Lynn Canal. The satellite had spent more than 40 years circling the Earth. Cosmos 1356 was launched in 1982 from the Plesetsk Cosmodrome, about 500 miles north of Moscow, in what was then the Soviet Union. On NASA's website, Cosmos 1356 is described as a 5,000-pound electronic intelligence satellite. This means it gathered electronic signals not directly related to communications. The Aerospace Corporation's website says satellites usually re-enter the atmosphere at more than 4 miles per second. Friction with the atmosphere heats the devices until they burst into flame. The object then appears to be traveling parallel to the ground, and the spectacle can last from 20 to 90 seconds. A request for comments from NASA went unanswered. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremenil.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Jeremy Shea, and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Riley Board in Kenai, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Alan DePremenil in Haines. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.